Hello and welcome to another episode of Motor City Metrics here at TigersMLReport.com. I'm Rogelio Simons, Chris Brown, Youper, and John. And you can find us on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to the podcast. And just first Thursday show in almost 3 weeks. But I had softball tonight at 6:30. And it was interesting because I was going to tell the story. I was waiting to tell the story on air. But last week we played a team. We lost 12-1. We got our butts kicked. And there was a person on this team. I'll just call her Softball Karen, for lack of better words. And she, from the outfield, one of our hitters, I think it was Max switched positions. He went from left to right at the plate. And she said, "Oh, that's a rule. You can't do that." Which I thought was strange because you're up 11 runs at this point. And then as soon as the game was over, she emailed the ump, and the ump was a big fan of hers anyways, and she called us obnoxious. So today, they're playing after us, and I was chirping, "Hey, look, it's the obnoxious team. Look, you want obnoxious, I'll give you obnoxious. I'll swear in Spanish. I'll do whatever to do the proof to myself that, or proof to you that I'm obnoxious." But come on, it's
was softball. The first purpose pitch in slow pitch softball history ever thrown. Did you guys knock someone down?
No. Today we just could not. The team we played today was fine. Last week was just obnoxious because it's just, but beer league softball. I love to hear, if anybody's watching us live on YouTube or who listens to our podcast on a regular basis, if you have a great rec sport story about somebody who's just an idiot or just somebody who's just like, come on, chill out, please email us at tigersmlreport@gmail.com. That'd be fantastic. I just want to hear people's stories about obnoxious people they've dealt with in softball. It can be hockey. There's beer league hockey. Anything. I'd love to hear a good story about that because, quite frankly, going back to days when I used to play in out in Garden City, I could tell stories all day about that. And I luckily for me, I don't manage anymore. Thank God. I don't want to manage a softball team anymore. But yeah, so we had a game at 6:30 and I was able to tonight. So on tonight's agenda, we're going to have, of course, the usual segments, the inside of numbers, the good, bad, the ugly, and the debut of a segment that, so I had a chat with, I was talking to a friend of the show, Corey, who works for Vice. He's a boxing writer and he's a boxing commentator. And you all know this guy on Twitter, Detroit Dan, or Dan Klein, who is a fascinating, he's a Tiger super fan. And he does this entire, like, just, he always posts like these. It's funny because I'm not sure how Dan's standing sometimes because he drinks these drinks from Starbucks that have the sugar content that are essentially, John, maybe if John had one of these drinks, I think John might be dead for all the sugar that's in it. And yeah, Detroit Dad's awesome. And he's a great Tiger fan. And we're going to do a 30-second segment every Thursday. And it's just him talking about, he buys jerseys too. Just Detroit Dan checking in from the desert. Nothing more, nothing less. Because, like I said, he's been a big follower of ours and he's been supporting the show. And I don't know. It's because either Chris is getting accused of saying Torque sucks, or we're too negative. Just, I don't know if I showed you the review we got on the minor league podcast, Youper, but 1 star. Old Chris doesn't talk bad about Torque.
True. It's true. It's one of our segments.
He gets paid for words, yeah.
It's the urinal cake. The urinal cake segment.
That's right.
Hey, good evening. No,
I have criticized Central Torkelson. I don't, some people might think it's unfair. I don't think I've ever criticized like his work ethic. My main issue is that I'm not sure if he can make adjustments quickly enough. He's been very good the last 2 weeks. There's no denying it. He's got like a 127 WRC plus the last 2 weeks. That will play just fine. That's that Rhys Hoskins level that I thought he would get to. But yeah, I don't know. I like, that's fine. I criticize players. I try not to be mean-spirited about it. I expect a lot from first round picks and the first overall pick.
Seems fair.
I haven't, I don't think I've dug a hole for Torque and buried him. I can understand everybody would be up with me if I'm not supporting him 100%. That's kind of the way that I roll.
Honestly, just, I think you're fair and you're not too critical about it, but it is what it is. It's just, I think people choose when somebody says something and particularly hyper focuses on it.
There's just a lot of fans who want him to succeed so badly.
Yeah.
And they're just not, if they hear a lot of an opinion to the contrary, they're just, they don't want to hear it. They have their binders on.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubting that the immediate future of the Tigers depends on Torkelson and Green becoming good big league hitters. And yeah, for the last couple of weeks, they have been. I said Torque was 127. Green has been like a 204 WRC plus over the last 2 weeks. It's kind of, it's like a 550 BABIP, but we'll take what we can get. Yeah, I understand the criticism of people.
No, and again, but they're making progress. And so that's all you can count for, except for yesterday against Rich Hill, which I look, honestly, for whatever reason, this goes back a long time. It goes back to days against Jamie Moyer, who had pitched inspired against the Tigers because they let him sit in Toledo for an entire year and then bring him up when the Tigers had the worst pitching staff in the American League at that time. Fun fact. And for whatever reason, they didn't bring him up. So anyway, but Rich Hill made quick work of the Tigers, and it's really a thing where I expected that a little bit because the Pirates was the first bad start by Erod. Tyler Alexander looks like he's, I don't know what Tyler Alexander, just, it is what it is. But either way, the quest for 500 continues as they will start a 3-game series starting on Friday. We'll break down the series in that a little later. But I like what Tyler Matson said on YouTube. He said, it doesn't help that a huge portion of the fan base believe that Torque was the second coming through the entire 2021 season. Warps everyone's perspective on when he came up. And you're absolutely right. The organization hyped him up. Harris Fulmer was just like, hey, this guy's going to be automatically good. There's people on Twitter. There's people that were seeing it everywhere. And the Tigers had no backup plan to sign up another first baseman either. That's a lot of pressure on him. And
yeah, it doesn't help that they had Miguel Cabrera for the last decade or so. And obviously we all remember when Miggy got his 3,000th hit, Spencer Torkelson hits a 3-run home run and everyone's like, this is the passing of the torch.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't help with that when people, especially we're accustomed to having Miggy at first base. And then you see number one overall pick, first baseman. I think people put unfair expectations on him.
And we have to accept some of that blame a little bit for always posting highlights. We see it every time. Anytime we post a highlight, somebody wants that player to come up because we don't post them going 0-for-4 with 3 groundouts to shortstop. That's not fun. So people just think these guys are in. They see stats and thinking it translates to the majors, and it takes time. So, whatever. But it does seem like soft tossing lefties have bedeviled the Tigers forever. But I suspect that happens to everybody. That's why soft tossing lefties are a thing. They exist. They've been around for a while. There are not many of them. They're not quite as rare as knuckleballers, but there are these guys that just know how to get by on guile and movement. And
it's Rich frustrating.
Drop his arms at arm angle. Stuff. Yeah.
It's frustrating as a fan to see that. And when they have one or two good games, it sticks with people. If you look up Bruce Chen against the Tigers.
Awful. Yep.
Bruce Chen's ERA against the Tigers is like 5.5.
Yeah. He had a couple really good games.
He shut him out a couple times in a pennant race, and all of a sudden, Bruce Chen owns the Tigers.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of timing, too.
It what was the Cardinal pitcher in the World Series, too? Was it
Anthony Reyes?
Anthony Reyes, he wasn't a hard-throwing lefty either, and he gave them fits. But in terms of career-wise, Bruce, I'm still amazed sometimes that he pitched for China, although he was from Panama, so that was interesting. But I just remember, especially against when the Royals were really bad, some of those teams he was on were terrible.
Yeah.
It was not an automatic win at all against everybody else the Tigers would be okay against. But for whatever reason, Chen can just go in there and just throw garbage. And he could succeed. And it was just, it's infuriating because the Tigers as a whole, I mean, they faced them, obviously, because he's at AL Central. But in terms of how many home runs do you think the Tigers hit off Bruce Chen in 22 games? Just John.
6.
Chris.
In 22 games?
Yeah.
In 12.
Huber.
14.
Uber was the closest. 17.
Ah.
17. And again, it maybe just because of like perception thing. Really, so in terms of against the Tigers lifetime, 5.42 ERA. He gave up 126 hits and 114 innings pitched, and it has a whip of a 1.42 Tigers lifetime.
Yeah.
He's 6-9. Nice. Against the Tigers.
It's one of those things when you see a guy throwing like barely cracking 90 or not even touching 90 and throwing these big loopy breaking balls, you feel like the hitter should be destroying him. But like you said, there's a reason those guys exist. There's it's unique enough and they know how to pitch well enough to keep big league hitters off balance. And that's ultimately that's all that matters, right? We'd love to see guys with throwing 98 to 101 with a 94 mile an hour slider, but it's about getting out.
Yeah.
And Rich Hill did a hell of a job as oldest player in baseball, right?
Yeah.
You had the foot race between him and Miggy. That was.
No, you know what else? It's not surprising Hinch got thrown out. Because one thing I can tell you, when you're behind the plate, it's frustrating seeing soft toss after soft toss on the corner, on the corner, on the corner, keep coming in there. And you don't get that fastball to hit. The whole rhythm of the game is different. And it's a frustrating thing. And it's tough on the umpire, too. Because they're also used to fastballs coming in once in a while. And the rhythm that generates, making calls, you got to be so patient on those off-speed pitches. And he's throwing them so slowly for the batter and the umpire and catcher, everybody. I can see how tempers get a little flared on some of those calls on the corners with Rich Hill throwing. And I think Hinch did a good job getting out there before Haas got himself tossed.
Yeah, I have a question about that game, too. So Riley Green coming into that game was probably the Tigers' hottest hitter. Wasn't in the lineup, and then we saw there was a ball hit to Matt Vierling out in center, a ball he could have caught that he missed, and two runs obviously scored, and that kind of set the tone for the game. Why do you think Riley Green wasn't in the lineup? Was it just as simple as Hinch didn't want him facing a lefty? Because I really didn't understand that.
Honestly, probably because of that, and I know that people were really pissed. I know Jed, who's in our chat right now, was made a point to point that out, and I'm going to be rational here, folks. He can get a day off. I know it's against the Pirates. He does struggle against guys like that. But Matt Vierling also, to be fair, outfield wise, hasn't been. There's a reason why he's in right. Who else are you going to put in center?
I guess for me, John, it's just a whole set of factors. He hadn't had a day off in a while. He was facing a left-handed pitcher, so that makes sense. There's an off day coming up the day after. So now you can make it a nice extended rest for your best player. It's a long season. We're in the middle of May. When you look around baseball, guys get days off. And I know when a good player gets a day out, a lot of fans, especially if they made time to watch the game, they want their best guys in the game. But that's just the sport. It's a long, long-ass season, and days offs happen. And Vierling, for Rodriguez, a couple weeks ago, he pulled a he pulled a home run back into the field. Okay. That was nice. He did that for Erod. Now he missed one yesterday, but I think that was a fairly tough play.
And Jed said they have all days before and after the 2-game series. After today, they don't have an off day again till June 1st. So maybe they just plan on putting Riley Green the whole time. And Harrison, thank you very much.
Exquisite.
It's very
nice.
Exquisite.
Oh, a double exquisite.
Like, thank you, Harrison.
Yeah, so one of the things, and I can bring this back to John a little bit. John, I know you love the NBA. And something that's happened over the last decade or so is that players just don't play every game anymore.
Load they play management. Like,
yeah, they'll play 68 games a year or something like that. And that's to try to keep guys healthy all season and keep them healthy for the playoffs. Now, I don't know if that the Tigers really care that much about keeping Riley Green healthy for the playoffs, but I'm sure they want to keep him healthy all year. And also, it's baseball. And Leland used to say this all the time. If I have guys on my team, I want to play them. I don't want them sitting for too long. So occasionally, you look for a spot like, okay, when can Matt Vierling get a start? Like at center, basically. Okay, we've got a lefty going. And that also gets, they got Hospice in left field, right? You had, was Ibanez in right? Who was Short was out there. They had every righty on the team out there. Facing a soft-tossing lefty, he thought that it would be a good matchup for him. I don't think anybody predicted they would only get one hit all game, but yeah, it's one of those things that happens when you're playing for, it's a 190 day season. you sometimes you just got to get guys in games and give other guys. And ultimately, I don't think it made a huge difference. And honestly, yeah, I feel like Matt Vierling probably could have caught that ball, but it's so tough to tell because we don't like Riley Green's a very good center fielder. We don't even know if he would have gotten to that. Really, they're both. I think Vierling's a good deal faster than Green. I think their sprint speeds are both pretty high this year, though. So it's just, I don't know. I don't think it was that big of a deal. But when you don't win, everybody goes, why'd we do this? Why'd we do that? Why'd we do that? Like, and it's just like, all right, well, if you just played all the lefties and they lost, then people would be like, why don't you play more righties?
Yeah. So, if it was like that type of game where there's really nothing positive to take away from. So you're just like nitpicking anything you got. Because they had one hit against the pitcher we expected to hit well against. And Erod, who's been fantastic, finally came down to earth a little bit. They got blown out by the Pirates. Like, it was one of the worst losses of the season, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about the win, the game before them.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. Yeah, I was going to say, that was a fun win. And it seemed like one of those kind of like a complete win in a sense of just in terms of the offense and the pitching. It's just Michael Lorenz looking really good. But you have the opportunity here to watch the Tigers go out and get production from everybody on the top of the order, with the exception of Nick Maton, went 0-for-2 with a pair of walks. But there was Kinstreet with 1-for-3, Riley Green 3-for-4. So you had all the contributions. Even Miguel Cabrera got in with the single, which we'll get to him in a second before we get to our segments. But overall, in terms of even pitching too, Will Vest does not. We saw him early in Toledo. I don't know who that Will Vest was. I have no idea who that guy was. That is not the same. That's not the same pitcher. I don't know what happened.
Will Carnigan.
I don't know who that Will Vest was we saw early in Toledo that was barely touching 93 and was just looking lackluster. He looks better than he did last year. He just came out there and just has looked great since Toledo. And so, again, showing that spring training, and even like just take some pictures, maybe it's a little while to get used to, but. And yeah, the bullpen hit three scoreless innings. It was a great victory. But again, they had to take advantage of the schedule. The Pirates, by the way, came in just getting pummeled by teams over 500. And the Tigers get another reprieve when they take on the Nationals this weekend. So I was fine with the split. And the reason why is because I know with Rich Hill, guys like that, they always tend to struggle.
If they come out of these five games going 3-2, that's fine. You want to get greedy, but you're playing 600 baseball or whatever. I think you'll be happy over the course of the season. So you do want to beat up on the teams that are totally bad, but they get paid too. So you do what you can.
Yeah. And so the reason why I was bringing up Miguel Cabrera was an interesting tweet today from a friend of the show. We've had him on the podcast, Mike Petrello of MLB.com. And it was an interesting tweet because I retweeted it. I thought it was fascinating. I'm going to pull up here. I'm just pulling it up right now. And basically, he was saying that what if Miggy got the Mike Schmidt treatment? Because he walked away beginning of the season in May of 1989 because he wasn't being Mike Schmidt anymore. Mike Schmidt was, for a decade, one of the best third basemen in the National League. Just power, consistency, and Miguel right now is not having a good year. And a lot of the fans, I hear people call in on 97 on the ticket and say he's out of shape and he's fat. I'm so sick of hearing that stupid narrative. First and foremost, you clearly don't pay attention to baseball. Like, if he's fat, quote unquote, then what is Matt Stairs then? Who's another big dude that played?
Lance Lynn count?
Yeah, Lance Lynn, yeah. I have to read that article that Cody put in there. Good call. By the way, Cody had a two RBI double in our game today. So,
oh, nice.
On our softball team. Go ahead.
I was going to say Dan Vogelback. No, that's
Vogelback. That's who I'm thinking of.
That is a husky guy. Puckett was like a Barry Sanders fat though, like super. Just because he could jump and run, was a little short squat. Yeah, there's different, like, Prince Fielder was a big old fella. Miguel Cabrera has been big since he was, like, 26.
Yeah.
Or maybe even younger. Like, his size is not an issue now.
Yeah.
He was great when he was large. Everybody gets bigger when they're older.
David Ortiz.
David Ortiz. Yep. And here's another thing, too. It's talk about the effort kind of thing. It's like all he's doing is on muscle memory. Like every day when I was down there, he is sore. He saw him field third base, can still do it. I don't know any fat guys that can play third base. I'm not saying he plays third base on Mo Vaughn. It's another good one. But it is what it is. He knows his skills are diminishing. It's not like he's going out there doing this on purpose. And then somebody was calling him out. Like, oh, he's going out there smiling. What, do you want him to be pissed? You want him to be sad? What the hell is wrong with you?
One of the things everybody's loved about Miguel Cabrera is how much he loves baseball and how much he enjoys himself while he's out there. And like, oh, suddenly he's smiling. You
can't smile. You can't be happy out there. Cameron, thank you. Cameron, yeah. The comment on YouTube, out of shape. Oh, try and be in shape with no cartilage in your knees. The guy literally, when he sits down, you can hear like audible pain. I've seen this. I'm not, if I didn't see this, I would probably, no, I still would be, I wouldn't be, excuse me, I would still be mad at some of the calls that come in. First and foremost, it's, if you're going to call in with that kind of take, get out of here. Just, anyway, my point is, I think if he, look, would you guys, here's a question for the room then. If Miguel Cabrera decided to retire today, just because he felt like he wasn't up to his ability, would you hold that against him at all?
No.
I think it's an easy answer, but some people would, I just feel like some people would just go, he's a quitter. That's what he does. And
yeah. So I think, people that are mad, I don't understand. Do you think he's like holding the team back in any way? Do you really think, let's say if you take him and this $30 million contract off the books, do you really think we're going to add a $30 million player this offseason and suddenly this is a playoff team? Like, I don't see how he's holding this team back in any way. I just don't understand why people are upset. It just doesn't make sense to me.
He's not there. Then you can, a healthy Carpenter or a healthy Meadows would be your DH sometimes. And Malloy might be up there. There are ways to get slightly better, I think, a win or two, but I don't think they would have gone out and signed Carlos Correa with $30 million or something like that. Now, the one idea I saw somebody say, and I thought it was like, that's interesting. Just make him, have him retire and make him a bench coach immediately. And suddenly Miguel, he gets to go, he's still getting his farewell tour. He gets to go and get his gifts everywhere. And he's just not playing, but he wants to play and he is making the money. So they're not going to cut him and he's not going to retire. So they're just trying to find spots for him to play once or twice a series. It's just going to be that way until he probably will get hurt again, unfortunately. I don't know. If he's hitting like 0.85 in July, they may just sit him down. But it's just the way it is right now.
He's earned the right, at least in the eyes of ownership, right, to play as long as he wants to play. And they're going to let him finish this out. He's having a good time. They've bestowed all this money on him. He'd be crazy to walk away in the eyes of many. That's why he's still here. He's doing what he can do. But just because he's smiling doesn't mean he's not trying. I mean, he's working, I'm sure, to succeed. But it's just not there anymore. And it's just the sad thing that this contract was always a legacy deal. It was a thank you for what you've done. It was never designed to end well. The odds of it ending well were always very low. Okay. David Ortiz had a wonderful send off, but he is the vast minority. Most guys break down at the end. He's having the Mike Schmidt, he's having the Willie Mays end to his career. And that's okay. It doesn't tarnish anything he's done in the past. He's still going to be a Hall of Famer. He's still going to have a statue in center field. He's still the greatest hitter I've seen in my adult life for the Tigers. Is he holding his team back? I thought it was a 67-win team. I'm still not convinced it's not a 67-win team. So if they're going to give him 200 more at-bats, that's fine. But I think Chris is right. I have a suspicion, at some point mid-July, if he's on an IL, that's a very distinct possibility.
Yeah, I think I've gotten to the point with him. He was a player I obviously grew up watching. And over the years, I've obviously wanted him to keep playing. But I've come to the point now where I've just accepted that he's not helping this team anymore. I don't know if other people feel that way because they don't have the same, maybe they have the same connection that I do with him because he was obviously growing up on those teams with Miggy in the middle of the order. I'm at the point now where it's honestly just sad watching him play because it's just, he's not really helping the team much at all. And I think the Tigers are going to be better off without him. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I would never thought in a million years I would
want Miggy off this team, but it's gotten to that point.
I mean, the contract was signed by Mike Ilitch. Mike Ilitch is one of the few owners who probably would have made that contract 2 years early, right? Because they could have waited 2 more years, gotten 2 more years of data on him and how he's going to progress as he ages. And he still would have taken that. Anybody sane would have taken that contract 2 years later. They didn't have to offer it to him early, but that's who Mike Ilitch was. He was a loyal guy, loved Miggy, wanted him around, and was willing to say, hey, the end's going to be ugly. I don't care. Plus, he wasn't probably going to be around to see it anyway.
But Tyler, I like this comment here by Tyler. His dad once said, yeah, contract's going to look like a bust in 2020 when he's horrible in his old hobbled age, but you hate it if he retired in a Yankees hat. And it's true. We would just be every Detroit, ooh, he's a Yankee, and it definitely would happen. And the thing is, you know what? And Walter and Jed both bringing this up in YouTube. Jonathan Scope is the biggest issue right now. They have to do something. Like it's to the point now where his defense is, you know, you can't excuse the defense. There has to be something to be said. And so if you can't get it going against one of the worst teams in the National League, I don't know. You have to look at Justin Henry Molloy's numbers again. But Molloy has had a good week. But again, as you talked about this on Monday, is he going to be a guy that can step in and contribute right away? And the answer for that is, I don't know. Because again, that adjustment from AAA to major league level is totally unique. And I still think he has a problem with sliders. And Chris and I talked about this last week on the minor league side of things. If he calls up and then he struggles, and everybody's just going to complain about that. So I just think they're not complain, but I don't think he's going to. He could hit the crap out of the ball. Who knows? But
the one thing in his favor, Raj, is, and if you viewed it strictly as Scope out and Molloy in, Molloy only has to do better than nothing because Scope is giving them nothing.
No. Good point, Harper. Good point. You're absolutely right.
He has a low bar to cross.
Yes.
In that rough game against Pittsburgh yesterday, Scope didn't make a couple of plays on defense. He made a couple of mistakes on defense. One of them was he fumbled the ball on a double play.
Yep.
And the other one, that was the rough one. And the other one was, I don't necessarily blame him as much for that one. I think second base was on his way and he missed the hop. But still, that led to a gigantic inning. Both of those plays, it was all part of that huge inning. And yeah, part of that is probably not playing every day, but when you're out there, you got to make the plays, and he didn't. And I was contemplating writing an article about this, and I was doing the math on it or whatever. And I don't know how much the Tigers care about Super 2 status, but I think Molloy will clear Super 2 threshold on the 27th or 28th. So in about 8-9 days, at which point, I don't know if that's what's keeping him down there. Like, you might as well keep him down to pass that now, but you haven't brought him up yet. So that could be that series against the White Sox. That could be the end for Jonathan Scope. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that was my question I was going to ask. The only other thing I could add is maybe they're just waiting for Carpenter to get back. And maybe once Carpenter's back, they'll cut ties with Scope. But I think Molloy right now is the guy they're looking at.
But then again, it would be down an outfielder. If they cut Scope, it would be down an infielder. So I think that...
They can have Vierling who can play the infield, right?
Yeah, but he hasn't played the infield yet, so...
I don't think they're hurting for infielders because they've got McKinstry, they've got Ibanez playing well, they've got Maton who can play second base, they've got Short right now. They've got a bunch of guys who can play second base if they need them, if they're just putting Molloy at third. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of... Some of it may be that it's a new thing for Molloy. Some of it may just be that they don't want to cut a guy who they're paying $7 million or whatever. I don't want to waste all that money. I'd rather keep having him play poorly. And it's a shame because I was like, 2021 was, I had a 111 WRC plus. He was an above average offensive player. And in the last two seasons, it's been like 50. It just, his bat has just completely evaporated. And it's like swinging a pillar of smoke up there. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either. And it could be a mental thing as far as that goes. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if it maybe was a Super 2 thing. Yes, the money value, but then at the same time, if the Tigers come out of the series, like it's the Nationals, then it's weird, they crisscross. So they go to Washington, they go all the way to Kansas City, and then they come home to Chicago. They come back over, they have a good, successful series road trip, And let's say they're a game or two out of first place of the Minnesota Twins. Then you have to consider going into June, they're in a division race. Again, division race, because you look at the AL East, by the way, all five teams are 500 in the AL East. That's how bad the AL Central is. That's how terrible it is. And honestly, to me, I'm almost like Chad with the comment in here. They should be paying me $7 million to watch John Scope. And Scope is, like I said, I'm always the type of person that waits the last minute. I want to be optimistic to a certain extent. But I think at this point, change is necessary because even with Nick Maton struggling, they need to get some sort of offense production because when the offense, you see what happened yesterday. When the bats like Green and Torque are put to sleep, it's bad. It's really bad. And you have to see Akil Baldew generate something. But it's just going to be ugly if they don't do something quick. All right, it's now time for Inside the Numbers. All right, Super, I'll have you start off today. What is your inside the number?
My number is 31.37%. 31.37%.
Oh, you know what? The pause there, Uper. That was nice.
31.37% of runners who are on first base in the Major League Baseball this year are going to third base on a single. That is the highest number since 1996. And what that comes from, most people believe is getting rid of the ship. There's a bigger hole between first and second base now. When a runner's on first and they're holding a runner on, and there's so many stolen bases in baseball now. The second baseman is shading towards second often. So there's that big hole. The shift used to take care of a lot of that. And now runners are going from first to third. And I think it's noticeable as you watch the game. There's just more action. So I think that's one of the positives of the rule changes. And it seems like a simple thing, a runner going first to third more often. But that's a fun part of baseball. So hopefully that continues.
All right. John, what's your inside the number?
So I got just a couple numbers on Spencer Torkelson. I was looking at his stats. So Torkelson's hard hit percentage is up 5.3% from last year. Last year was 41.8. This year it's 47.1. His K percentage is down 4%, 24.5 last year. It's 20.5 this year. And then his walk percentage is down 2.6%, 9.2 last year, 6.6 last year. So I think what that is showing is there's been progress. Now, it hasn't been to the extent maybe some fans have hoped, but his expecting batting average, 268, has been a lot better in the month of May. OPS is around 800, a little bit under 800, which is, I think a lot of people would be happy with that if he could continue that. And yeah, I think he's been a little bit unlucky, and I think the numbers are suggesting that hopefully he can take a little bit more walks. But yeah, I think Torkelson, there's been progress that's going to be made. And I think we're going to see that continue as the season goes along.
So did you say the strikeout rate is down from 24 to basically 20%?
Yeah, down 4%.
Wow. So basically that's like a 16% drop in strikeout rate. And that's significant, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No, you see it with, I take a 4% drop or a 2% drop in walks for a 4% drop in strikeouts if it means a 5% gain in hard hit rate. Like John said. So yeah, he's came into this year obviously trying to be more aggressive, and it's taken a while for it to work, but yeah, it's things are trending up right there. So that's good to see.
Chris, what's yours?
So mine's in the number is 283. That is the number of singles hit by the Washington Nationals this year, which is by far the most in baseball. The Angels are number two at 266. Like the difference between the Nats and the Angels is like the same as the difference between the Angels and the 20th team. The Tigers are 25th at 15. But it's just odd because they're 27th in doubles and 29th in home runs, three by the Tigers. And they're dead last at ISO at 108. So the Nationals put the ball in play and get a lot of singles, but they don't do a lot of damage. So it'll be interesting that the Tigers have been pretty good on defense this year, aside from their occasional debacle inning, like one against Pittsburgh, one against Cardinals, so I wouldn't be shocked to see a bunch of double plays this weekend.
You just send those stats to Matthew Boyd. He's going to be so damn happy.
Yeah.
You don't hit home runs.
Maybe, yeah, it's the immovable force versus the irresistible object. I just thought it was wild. Like the Nets, you don't think of them as a terribly offensive team. They're just poking singles left and right.
Yeah, it's a classic 1960s, classic National League baseball from that point, from that perspective. My number this week is 86, and that is the percentile rankings of Jason Foley when he pitches. And the reason why I point that out is because last year it was 63, and this year so far already it's at 86. And Foley's a 6'4 guy, so he's getting max extension on that, and that's what's causing a lot of issues, like in terms of his pitching for when he's throwing his sinker, which is, again, hasn't been touched. He's got 11 strikeouts on it. And that's the other number I wanted to bring up was 2. So that is the number of strikeouts he's got with his changeup. You saw his slider's kind of a setup pitch, but this is an example of Chris Fetter, mad labbing it, or whatever you want to call it, just getting the maximum out of his pitchers out of the bullpen. So again, even with his sinker being his changeup getting a 36% whiff rate, again, setting up everything else. It's just, it's good to see. Like when you look at, for example, people can look at the number and say, if you look at his numbers and say, oh, somebody, they're batting 375 against his pitch or something, as an example. Okay, then look at the whiff rate of it. Pay attention. Look a little closer. You realize that no one's doing anything against that pitch. And he still hasn't given up a home run on anything. So my point is that extension, just getting that max set like that, just using every single, like, you know, you go hunting and you don't use every single spare part. I know it sounds like a very weird analogy when I'm going with this, but it's nice to see Tigers getting everything out of the bullpen arm and Jason Foley. And again, the bullpen, I haven't been on Thursday in a while. So that being said, I'm just stoked to see that they've been able to get what they get production out of. All right. So let's move on and let's go over the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I know I have not had a chance to change it to Western Z. Actually, I like this Z better anyway. All right. So Chris, what is your good, the bad, and the ugly this week?
All right. So my good is young Mr. Jackson Holliday. I don't know if you've been paying attention to what he's been doing. The first overall pick last year, he started the season in low A, as you might expect for a high school kid taking first overall last year. But he hit his way out of there in 13 games. He batted 392, 523, 667. That's an 1190 OPS. So they sent him to high A Aberdeen, which is pretty advanced for a first-year player. And after 18 games, he's hitting 391, 500, 719 for a 1219 OPS. I haven't checked to see what he's done tonight, but his last two games, his 9 plate appearances went like this. Home run, double, triple, triple, single, single, double, triple, line out. He does not turn 20 until December. It is not out of the question that he makes the double A by July.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he looks like he's swelled, but at least in the face, he's rosy-cheeked and looks
yeah.
Like, yeah, he looks like he's going to be a monster. So,
I think I read somewhere he had the 5 straight barrels in that streak you talked about.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. Yeah, he's got speed. He's playing shortstop. It's, he's been awfully impressive so far. Like I said, I didn't check to see what he did tonight, so maybe he went 0-4. But that's my good. My bad. This one kind of shocked me when I was looking around earlier. The Atlanta Braves defense. And I can't lie. It's not like I've been watching Atlanta to see if they match the eye test or whatever. But I was looking over at his Baseball Savant, and they are the worst team defense by far. According to outs above average, they are negative 19 outs above average right now. The next worst teams are Baltimore and Cincinnati at negative 13. So they're like 50% worse. And StatCast says it cost them 15 runs, just 5 more than any other team. And the big problem seems to be the infield, where you got Austin Riley at negative 4, Vaughn Grissom at negative 4, and Ozzie Albies at negative 5. But the worst defender is somehow Ronald Acuna Jr. at negative 6, which is absolutely bizarre to me, considering how fast he is, how strong his arm is, what a talented athlete and player he is. So I don't know what, he's closing his eyes in the outfield. I don't know what could possibly be happening there.
I thought I read somewhere where he got his ratings on the jumps he gets isn't great.
That could, yeah, it could be it. Maybe he thinks he's fast enough to catch up to everything. Negative six runs for an outfielder, or negative 6 outs above average for an outfielder already. Sounds, that's outrageous. This is, we're a quarter way into the season. That's like DH level defense. And my ugly would be Trevor Bauer's performance in Japan. Bauer is a pitching for the Yokohama Bay Stars. And his first start was fine, as you might expect for a former Cy Young winner pitching over in Japan, the second best professional league in baseball. But his last two starts have been absolute garbage. 7 earned runs in each game. His last start was 7 earned runs on 8 hits with just 1 strikeout and 2 innings. He currently owns an 8.40 ERA through 15 innings, having allowed 26 hits in 5 home runs. That's just a tough break. A tough break. I feel bad for him. Not at all.
No, I was just kidding. No, you don't. I know you don't. Bro, what's your good and bad deal this week?
My good was a pretty easy one this week. Colt Keith in the Detroit Tigers minor league system. One of the games for the ages. That's the game he'll never top in his lifetime, most likely. Who would? 2 home runs, 2 singles, double and a triple for the cycle plus, the mega cycle, whatever name you want to give it this week. It was really fun to sit there and listen that night while the Tigers were playing. Every time you refresh Twitter, Colt Keith had gotten another extra base hit.
By the way, real quick, Youper, I felt so bad because Chris was getting the clips and I told him to take the next 9 off because it was literally every 5 seconds. I'm not kidding, because we started getting notifications and I'm just like, it was like every, just that whole entire first 3 innings seemed like it was, went for an hour.
Yeah. That day was bonkers. Just about every prospect in the Tiger system hit a home run or had hit something.
12 home runs.
Campos, Pacheco, you had Dingler, you had Parker Meadows, you had Lipsius, you had O'Keefe going absolutely. Yeah, it was wild. And then last 2 days they've done nothing.
That's crazy.
It's Harrisburg of all damn teams, dude.
No, when Keith was 4 for 4, at that point he still didn't have the cycle, right? He hadn't had the single yet. But if you just got if you went 4 for 4 and got a cycle, you got 10 total bases. At that point, he was 4 for 4 with 13 total bases. It was way better than a cycle. It just wouldn't have the sexy name to it. It was really one of those amazing nights, and good for him.
That was, not to interrupt one more time, but Rogelio and I went out to Erie to begin the year. We were at a game where Gage Workman needed a double for the cycle. And instead, he hit another home run. It was like, no cycle, but
I know it's so wrong. You can't say you hit for the cycle when you do that. You should have just, all he had to do was what? Miss third. And you would have got credit for a double.
Yeah, but I don't think he cared that much. But
my bad. We already talked about it. It was Jonathan Scope. We look at he's hitting 206, 275, 254 slug. And I won't spend much time on it, but yes, the biggest thing now is, if he's not providing elite defense, why be here? The play that he dropped at second base was a double play. That really hurt. It was not a transfer. He definitely dropped it. Last Friday with Boyd pitching, another double play. He gets onto that inning and the score is tied, but he couldn't make that play either. It was a hot shot. It wasn't easy. But man, if he's not going to hit, you got to convert that play, and he hasn't done it. And I agree with Chris. The umpire kind of screened him on another one. Nobody's fault, but again, you would like to see him make that play if possible. Yeah, it's time. You cannot see Jonathan Scope as being any part of the future. They couldn't make a convincing argument of that. So they might as well eat the money and move on. So we got the good, the bad. My last one, instead of the ugly, is the glovey. In terms of gloves, we talked a lot about Eduardo Rodriguez, how well he's pitched, and he certainly has. It's been fantastic. But I was looking at Sports Information Solutions. That's run by John Doohan. He's one of Bill James's guys. They analyze all defensive plays. Before yesterday's start, Eduardo Rodriguez had the second most, what they rated as good defensive plays behind him on the season in all of MLB. So when you factor in, when you talk about how well Rodriguez has been pitching, Detroit defense has been a big part of that. So it was interesting that his day got off on a bad note when a play didn't get made behind him to illustrate what defense has been doing for him. I thought it was an interesting note, because the Tiger defense does feel better to me this year without having looked it up a lot.
John, what about you?
All right. So my good is the Dodgers. I was thinking about this the other day. I remember in the offseason, a lot of people doubted the Dodgers. They lost Trey Turner. They lost Justin Turner. Didn't have the offseason you were accustomed to for them, losing big free agents instead of going out and getting big free agents. So far, the Dodgers are 8-2 in their last 10, 28-16 at the top of the NL West. And I think the lesson I've learned is don't doubt the Dodgers, because no matter what, it seems like they always have someone waiting in the wings. Whether it's James Outman this year, Michael Vargas has also been a contributor for them. Their pitching's still good. They still have a really good farm system with guys like Bobby Miller. Don't doubt the Dodgers. I heard a lot of people picking the Padres to win this division. The Dodgers got off to a little bit of a rough start. The Dodgers are going to be fine. They have a great farm system. Shohei Ohtani is going to be a free agent this offseason. I think that's my number one destination for him right now. The Dodgers, they're going to be fine. They're going to be in the playoffs, and I think they have a pretty good chance of winning this division. My bad connected to the Dodgers is the Padres. 20-24 on the season. I don't know. You look at the big names, they got the big names. Juan Soto, Bogarts, Tatis, Machado, but they don't have the depth. Their pitching depth is really, really questionable. They've had Nick Martinez, who I didn't even know was a starter. I thought he was a reliever. He's been starting games for them. Joe Musgrove has been injured. He hasn't been very good. You've got Yu Darvish, who's getting up there in age. Blake Snell's been really inconsistent for them. And their farm system's pretty depleted, obviously, with the trades that they've made. They're playing Nelson Cruz. I don't know. Are they still a playoff team? Yes, but it's been pretty disappointing to see the start they've been off to. Like I said, I think they can turn it around. For the star talent that they have and the money they've spent, 20-24 is pretty disappointing. I'd say probably the most disappointing team so far. And then my ugly, I got a couple. It was just Jose Abreu hasn't hit a home run in 164 at-bats. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I really don't know what's going on there. I still believe in him as a player and as a hitter. Trace Thompson, has Trace Thompson not been good for the Dodgers this year?
No.
Been very bad, yeah.
He dropped off the face of the planet again. Well, see, Tiger fans? Relax.
The Dodgers have been okay.
Abreu's been kind of Jonathan Scopey in terms of slash line.
He's one of the handful of hitters with a lower WRC plus than Nick Maton.
Yeah, I think he can still turn it around. I think he could have a week where he maybe hits a couple home runs, but it's been interesting to see. Obviously, he came over. The White Sox was the only team that he knew. I don't know if it's just having trouble adjusting to a new team or what's going on there, but he's hit his whole career. I don't really know if I expect this to continue for him. And then just my bonus ugly would be the Pistons getting the 5th overall pick. I did post my reaction, but I don't know. My reaction, if anyone saw it, it was completely like pure. That was honest. I just like lost control of myself for a little bit. So I usually don't like act like that. I try to keep it pretty mellow, but I kind of lost there. But yeah, interesting. And that was an interesting day.
What I say on Monday? What I say on Monday? Say, can I get the pick?
It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, I knew
it's
that.
It's weird how the team with the most famous French basketball players ever end up with the best French basketball prospect ever.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's crazy. They were due.
Right now. So. Now, I know how these are rigged, probably. But I remember the process of doing this is a lot more complicated than, I think J.J. Cooper wrote a story about being in the room for the baseball lottery and how it didn't make any sense to me how it worked. I'm like, oh, I thought they just drew ping pong ball. But you have to do, it's like a combination of 10 numbers. And yeah, that was a huge bummer for all Detroit sports fans. But I joked about it the day before that morning. I was like, who the Pistons going to take with the 5th pick? Because you're playing with fire when you're relying on the lottery in any sports. The Red Wings have never moved up in the lottery. The Pistons have had lottery luck once, basically. Maybe twice with the Darko pick way back in the day. And then they use it on Darko. Tigers got some lottery luck this year. And you know what? Damn good year to have lottery luck. So, hey, there's some of that. As long as they don't screw it up. But
I don't think they're going to screw it up. But the Blackhawks getting the number one pick was pure nonsense. That was just, come on. It's the same thing as the cold envelope, i.e. Patrick Ewing in 1985. The cold envelope. Well, it's just,
it is hard when LeBron James ends up with Cleveland. It's like, how do we not view this as being some sort of, but.
Orlando Magic getting the lottery pick back to build up pretty quickly in the 90s. Remember that? The Magic got two number like top drafts.
Yeah. Shaq
like,
and Penny.
Shaq. Yeah. Yeah, Shaq, and then they took Chris Webber and then traded him for Penny. Yeah.
Yeah.
It always makes you raise your eyebrows, but I don't know. They're trying to prevent tanking, and it's not preventing tankings.
Yeah.
Teams tank all the time in every sport still. So I guess you're just kind of like the A's. The A's had, I think, one of the three best chances to get the first pick last year, and they fell to sixth, I want to say. Yeah, and this is like a five-player draft or four players at the top. So that was a real punishment for them. It's not going to stop them from playing terrible. They put together one of the worst rosters ever this year.
Yeah, and A's are getting rewarded for being bad by going to Oak. But even the Vegas thing, that's not even a done deal. And it's ridiculous. But there's tanking everywhere, and it's just,
Yeah, the best teams don't have to tank. Look at the Dodgers, the Rays. You don't see them. When was the last time they tanked?
It's hard to tank baseball, but it's just like
the Orioles did it. The Tigers were doing it. You've seen that the Cubs and the Astros did it. Like,
you mean the Orioles who purposely did not spend any international money? No, I don't think they were tanking at all.
Yeah, in the years when they lost 100 plus games multiple years in a row, but they also got talent every which way, and the Tigers tanked and did not work so good.
Crazy.
But I don't know. One of the things, this is neither here nor there, but it was like a little thought exercise we were having in the Discord, was where would Spencer Torkelson and Casey Mize go in this year's draft? We haven't discussed the draft at length on the show, but in my opinion, I think Tork would probably go somewhere between 3 and 5, and Mize would be like 6 to 9, something like that. So just to give you an idea of how strong the top of this year's class is.
I think Mize would probably go towards the end of the first round.
I don't know about that. If you're comparing, he still had a great junior year for Auburn.
So you're talking about his junior year, based off that.
Yeah, I'm not like in hindsight. Just
oh no no, I was just thinking though, not even for hindsight purposes, but I just thought that maybe I still think like 15 to 20, only because just simple. Yeah, his numbers are great, but I have noticed a trend with pitchers who are seniors; they're not getting drafted as high as they once were. So that's why I thought, because based off that trend, that's the only reason why I thought it would go middle or towards the end.
Yeah. I mean, I still think he would have schemes is on another planet right now, but Dollander has fallen off the map a little bit. So you'd have a junior Casey Mize with good stuff and good numbers and a strong track record. I think teams would feel comfortable taking him as a safer pick in the, maybe 5 to 15 range, but yeah, that just goes to show you, like I said, it's telling how strong the top of this year's class is when those guys would not probably sniff the first overall pick.
Right. Speaking of the draft, a couple of mock drafts out this week. And I know it's early, and people making the mock drafts admit it's early, but two of them have the Tigers on Walker Jenkins right now.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Over Wyatt Langford.
And then our buddy Harris just tweeted out that hey, don't be surprised if the Pirates take Wyatt Langford number one.
That's my guess.
It's like Langford's stats are not that far off from Crude, honestly. Right. They're both hitting over 400 and hitting in the SEC with power. It's nuts. But yeah, it does feel like a year where you just take the guy who's the best player. Yeah, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But yeah, like Walker Jenkins, that's the thing is people just they think, oh, he's a high schooler, take the college guy. He's quicker to the majors. And we talked about Riley Breen versus J.J. Bleday last week. What if you think Jenkins is a big Jackson Holiday level hitter? I was just talking about 20 minutes ago. Who's a guy who's going to make it to Double A in his first full season because he's that good of a hitter. Like, yeah, then you're taking the guy who might have more athleticism and more defensive ability. So, I don't know. It'd be really fascinating this year. It's a fun top of the draft.
And this stuff going to be... I think we'll save Mondays to be our second show of the week. Go deep diving on draft. We'll probably, like I said, maybe on the second show too, but definitely do some more draft talk next time. So my good this week. I'm sorry, Chris.
I'm sorry. I might have an article about the outfielders in this year's play.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And I'll probably have something. I'm going to have a mock draft up for Fansided here probably by the end of the weekend. So my good this week, and it's a gentleman on the screen here. And that is one Anibal Sanchez, who announced his retirement, I believe today. And happy tours to a guy who I've been a big fan in terms of like fandom aside. I was a big fan of his stuff, was a big fan of how he went out there and just his windup and everything. And it just, it was cool to see a colorful windup like that. And just was a solid pitcher for the Tigers. And he was under 500 to be fair with the Tigers, but again, it was towards the bad part of the run here. But I have more good memories than bad memories. And in 6 years with the Tigers, he was just, I love watching him pitch. And he was, again, in terms of just overall clutchness too, his best season in the Tiger uniform was 2013. He had 6.1 WAR. He was fourth in the Cy Young Award running, and just a joy to watch. And
ERA title that year?
Yeah, I believe he won the ERA title that year. Yeah. So again, this is a team that was one of Jim Leland's best teams, and that was the team they lost to the Red Sox. But thanks for the memories, as Walter said in the chat. But yeah, definitely Animal Sanchez is my good this week, and tip of the cap to him, and whatever he decides to do in retirement, I'm sure he'll be kicking ass at it.
Yeah. Didn't he almost have the no-hitter against the Twins? You guys remember that game? He took it into the ninth inning.
Yeah, I know he had a came close a couple times. I don't know if he also got foiled by Josh Harrison. He got Verlander. But he also had, the 17th strikeout game?
Against the Braves?
Yeah, I mean, he was, for that little period there, he was absolutely great. And, the 2013 Tigers team, arguably one of the three best Tiger teams of all time. Sigh.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that. Yeah, the 4Ks in one inning against Boston, that was a good call there, Walter. My bad this week is Shohei Ohtani, and not because of what you might think. So over his last four starts, he's given up home runs. And he gave up three home runs against Baltimore. So in total, he's given up 8 home runs in his last four starts. So I don't think I would never have thought I'd put Shohei Ohtani in this category. I'm sure he'll snap out of it. One of the starts he did have against St. Louis, where he allowed 2 home runs, he struck out 13. So even then, Ohtani was still dominant out there. And I think that one of the things that we can take really pride in the fact that he can still go out there and match too. After all that, his ERA is posting at 3.23. So heading into the month of May, he had an ERA 1.85. That's when he's, so that's my bad. My ugly is the Blue Jays and Yankees. That entire series is chippy. I like that they have a rivalry, because some of it was just, especially Domingo Germán wiping stuff off his hands. Come on, folks. It was pretty clear what he was doing. What were you doing that weird look for, Chris? What's going on? What was it?
I'm trying to do the Aaron Judge's side eye.
The Aaron Judge side eye. And it was again, thanks to John Boy Media, who has the ability to amplify anything out of New York. And it was a story. It's a story regardless, but those Aaron eye Judge eyes, I'm surprised. You know what? That should be a meme somewhere. It has to be a meme somewhere.
I think it has been, when somebody walked past you or whatever. Yeah. But it always gets amplified when it's the Yankees.
Yeah.
And they're really getting a little picky too. And they were worried about where the third base coach was standing and that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. The whole situation was strange. But yeah, there was the Jays and them, it's just the entire time too. Like there was, I think, what was it? The Jays manager called one of the Yankee guys fat and him and Judge and him and I kid you not. I think Aaron Boone's the kind of guy that would go out on the street and fight. Like, I really believe that. Like when he was on ESPN, I never thought that. Like, I thought he was like mild mannered, but holy cow, man. Like that guy is a red ass, and there's nothing wrong with it. I like his competitive nature. Those two teams do not like each other whatsoever, and it's been that way. And when you have that kind of, the Jays don't have John Boy Media behind them, so unfortunately, that's just going to be the way it is, because they're in Canada, and so either way. But I thought it was fascinating. I thought that whole series was just, it was ugly in a sense, because I who won the series. Like, it was one of those things where this is going to be a tight series between these two teams, and you walk away going, okay, if I'm an AL Central guy, which we cover a team in the AL Central that's, they're getting better, but you come to find out that the Yankees did lose a series of Toronto, but would you have known that? No. It was all about Aaron Judge and this. I'm not even.
Yeah.
I can't. So yeah. I'm with Christopher. I missed the Jays title Tigers rivalry in the '80s. I miss a good rivalry. Great. It was great. It was. It got feisty too. Tony Fernandez broke his arm. Is that right? In '87, deeper towards the tail end of September.
Yeah. Right? Somebody broke up a double play, right?
It was a quote unquote aggressive play.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue Jay fans were pissed.
Yeah.
So,
it feels it's the most natural rivalry for the Tigers. Like every time the Blue Jays come to town, thousands of angry drunken Canucks spill into Detroit and they're booing and throwing stuff on the field and it's great. It's a great atmosphere. And I would like that for we'd look into realignment at some point with an expansion and we would want Toronto in there with
the Tigers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Major League Baseball has quite frankly told us that the Pirates are the Tigers' natural rivals.
I don't care about the Pirates. I don't care. Like the Jays to me, Jay fans are also the most well traveled too. They will I've talked about this numerous times, how they'll go through all their minor league games that like the people make vacations and they'll make a point of it. And I was talking to Corey, my buddy over at Vice, and Jay fans are they may not show it all the time, but they are very one of the most knowledgeable fan bases. They know their stuff, they know their players, and they are heart and soul all the way through. And they come to Detroit and take over a ballpark. They did that even when I went to the game in Toronto, and it was weird because I was always seeing Labatt Blue everywhere, and that was Budweiser, which is strange because that used to be a whole Labatt town. Now it's Budweiser. And seeing the red and white just didn't strike a chord. It was just really weird. Anyway. Yeah, if you see a game in Toronto, it's the Sky Dome is showing its age a little bit, but that's a fun place to see a game, and I would love to see a rivalry with that. But that is my good, the bad, and the ugly for this week, and that concludes the segment. And before we move on,
you had me thinking about something. I was just, could you imagine a wild card series, 3-game set, Tigers and Blue Jays?
That would be awesome. It would be epic. But now we have to put that fantasy away and not think about it. Because then if we start thinking about it, we'll get all mad. Not mad, but just it'll be sad, if you will. Without further ado, though, I don't know if you guys can. Do you guys hear that? Or no? Oh, no.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to put this on the big screen here in just a second. But yeah. So without further ado, we're going to bring on, it's a tape pre-recorded segment. But I wanted to bring on Detroit Dan because, again, guy's kind of like, I don't want to say the voice or anything, but he's an optimistic fan. We tend to be called too cynical. We get called too mean. But this gentleman right here is always positive. He's always upbeat. And you gotta respect that because
get set here. New feature.
Yeah, it's a new feature. We're trying to get a little bit of different action. Without further ado, though, here is Detroit Dan.
Oh, my good friends at Motor City Metrics. This is Detroit Dan, always rocking the D out here in the desert. My chosen jersey for this week.
My chosen jersey of the week for this week.
Is Riley Green. Riley Green is currently batting 279.
Riley Green is currently batting 279.
He's had three hits last summer and 15 RBIs.
He's got three homers this year and 15 RBIs. Heads up.
Riley Green.
Get your heads up.
Is my designated chosen Tigers jersey.
Is my designated chosen Tigers jersey.
Hello, my good friends.
It's going to be a segment that's going to evolve in time. But I was going to say, I asked him too. I'm like, he goes, what should I send over? I'm like, you collect jerseys. Tell us, like, oh, you didn't. Yeah, there was. Yeah, that. No, no, it's fine, Tyler. I was curious about that too. That's my. Yeah, that was my bad. I take responsibility for that, though. But anyway, Detroit Dan, salt of the earth. He represents Tiger fans and out in Arizona. And again, the drinks. His Starbucks orders are legendary. So see, Sedona, Arizona. But
he goes to that. I know he's a frequenter of that. There's a Detroit cafe in Scottsdale.
Yeah,
where they serve the conies and all the Detroit stuff and. A lot of Tigers gear there. I've been there once a few years ago. Pretty cool place. And I always love when Dan, he visits the northern lower peninsula and the upper peninsula every summer and posts his highlights. And it's a hell of a time to follow him and his wife along.
Yeah. And especially, I think he was in Flint this week. And it was funny because he was just talking about some of there was an order, like the chefs, I forgot where it was, but anywho, like I said, it's a segment in progress. But all right, so we have a couple questions in chat and we got a couple questions line. And what should we go with first? Let's go here with Harrison in chat. Want to know if Colt Keith could make the bigs this year. No, only because a lot of things would have to happen for that to happen. If he continues to, until that game, he was struggling in the month of May, but I personally, no, I don't think so, but stranger things have happened. And then the other question in the chat before we get to the Twitter questions from Joe, biggest off-season needs. I would say myself, or you guys go ahead, take this question over. I'll sit back.
I would say offense, some sort of offense. Because if you have Miggy coming off the books, you have Scope coming off the books, you could add a hitter. But then also you have Boyd and Lorenzen coming off the books as well. And then we don't know what's going to happen with Erod. So I think they would need a starter too. So I would say they're going to have money to spend. I like one or two, maybe a three-year deal. We saw Boyd got $10 million, right? Lorenzen got around that too. Maybe they do a little bit higher. Maybe they give a pitcher a two-year $40 million deal, something like that, one-year $15 million deal. And then maybe a hitter for a two- or three-year deal around the same AAV. So I would say two impact players because they're going to have money to spend. I don't think they want to commit to anyone long-term. But they need some impact players. They need some veterans to help push this team forward for next year.
I would say personally, obviously, a lot depends on what does Scuba look like when he comes back. Do we see any of Casey Mize? Does Matt Manning appear and look like anything worth keeping around? That'll determine what they spend on pitching. But really, it comes down to what same thing I said last offseason, power. There's no power on this team. They need to find some impact backs, whether Torkelson develops into one or not. They'll still need more. There's also a good chance Javi Baez is playing his way into opting out because he's looking pretty good. How long can he keep that up? Really, it's going to come down to, I would hope they are shopping for power bats. I'd love to see what's available.
Chris?
Yeah, they're not a good team. They need everything. You need a frontline starter. You need a middle of the order bat. You need... But yeah, I don't know if those guys are out there in any real capacity. I don't know. I guess I would prefer at this point a frontline starter just to feel like you can beat every fifth day. Like that feeling we have with Erod, right? I feel like when he's out there, they're going to have a chance to win. I miss that. Tigers used to have that a lot of days.
Yeah.
I don't know, crazy 4 or 5 days out of five. And it's a good feeling when you go, okay, maybe the offense has an off night, but we might only need two runs to win. So I would like that. Again, I don't know who's out there who could do that, if they could trade for somebody, but that would be my priority.
I would like you talk about the veteran side of things. I just would want an outfielder with power. It's been on my wish list for the last 4 years. That's all I simply want. So question-wise, Chris, did you get the questions or do you want me to get the questions?
I saw two on Twitter. I don't know if there were more since I looked.
I got them right here if you guys want me to.
Go ahead and read them out, John.
Okay, so from Epic D3C MSU, what is Parker Meadows and Colt Keith's potential in the MLB?
Go ahead, Chris.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Parker Meadows, who, first and foremost, I like to correct the mistake. On Sunday, I did say he was struggling against lefties. He's actually hitting better against lefties than he did last year. But his average against righties are down. But I think Parker Meadows, because of his speed and his ability to cover so much ground in the outfield, I think as far as his potential, I think he could be a good third everyday player if he can continue to hammer the ball. But right now, just based off what we're seeing right now, if he can develop into consistent at bats, third out, maybe a fourth, I don't want to say fourth outfield. That's, I don't know, an everyday regular. just slightly, maybe a potential to be an all-star. Potential. Cole Keith, I think it looks like a potential all-star. He just mashes everything he does. It's just he's doing things at his age that a lot of players haven't done. He doesn't strike out a ton, and he's hitting everything. And so it depends on where the Tigers want to put him. But I see Cole Keith as one of the first all-stars from the prospect side of things in a while.
Yeah. So in terms of, because we're all about the numbers, what kind of numbers like do you think they can put up, like OPS wise, home run?
I don't really do that. To me, it's just disingenuous because I could go and project, is he a 25, 30? I don't know. Honestly, I just know that if he's going to be a guy who's going to be above average hitter in the major leagues, OPS, I don't know. It's just, Chris, is there a science behind that I'm missing or?
No. So in my head, we're talking about potential. We're talking about ceiling, right?
Yeah.
We're not saying like the most likely outcome is probably some sort of
specific numbers, right?
Average regular. Two players that come to my mind who are similar. For Parker Meadows, I think of Dexter Fowler, who fits that mold of a average to above average regular who might be an all-star a season or two. And with him, you're talking like a 750 OPS, maybe 850 in a great year while playing center field, which gets you an all-star bid. And like 15 to 20 home runs, 15 to 20 steals. Like that I think is Parker Meadows' ceiling in the big league, which is fine if he's playing center field defense. And with Colt Keith, he just kind of reminds me of the left-handed Austin Riley. Now, Austin Riley has had a couple monster seasons, like damn near 40 home runs. I don't know if Keith will get there, but to me, he's that level of hitter where he can be a guy who's going to hit you 250 to 280 with a lot of game power in his prime. And that's, again, like all-star level talent. But again, I'm talking about the ceiling. Will he get there? I don't know. But I think that's how I view those two guys.
It's interesting you brought up that player. For Colt Keith, I was thinking in that 250, 280 hitter, steady guy with some power. I was thinking a left-handed Travis Fryman in my mind. That's how I see that possibly being. If he's that level of player, the Tigers would have a long-term regular who maybe is a 3, 3.5, 4 player on a consistent basis. And that's an excellent player. Meadows, again, I'm going to base it on 3 games that I saw this week, but I've watched other games too. Is he a platoon guy? Maybe. Are there some limitations to his offense? I have a hunch there might be. Is he a 2, 2.5, 4 player? I think that would be a pretty good outcome for him.
Yeah. Again, the reason why I'm not being specific on the numbers, simply put, I just think that if he comes up and hits above average, that's all I want. I just don't like, I just don't like guessing OPS. I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. He hasn't had a great year in Toledo. He's got a couple home runs this week, which is nice to see. He's what, 23, AAA. I think he's relatively on schedule. So it's a great spring. Yeah. Like I think in his prime, at his best, he could be an all-star. But probably more likely to be close to an average regular.
John, go with the next question.
Okay. Yeah. So we got Deadly Ninja Bees. He says, Scope is obviously cooked, but what about Tyler Alexander? He's a human white flag right now. I'd rather see McKinstry pitch. I guess that's what Rogers left.
And then Dingler's resurgence real?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Scope at length today. I think it's safe to say he is cooked. And obviously he's cooked, but as far as Tyler Alexander goes, he's on bide time too. Right now, I don't think there's a solution right now, as of right now, in Toledo or Erie. But if there was one, but then again, they signed a bunch of arms for a reason. They signed Sam Clay, Heath Embry. There's a reason why, because they're not clearly happy with something in the bullpen, that being Tyler Alexander.
Is he on options?
I believe he. Let me double check that. That's a good question. But yeah, I think he's done. I love Kyle Alexander. I've been on a. For the Tigers got him in the second round. Yeah, he does have 2 options left, Uber. Huh. So they could send him down if he wanted to.
I feel like historically what happens to Alexander struggles like this, and somehow he gets a start and pitches fairly well for 4 innings, and then figures things out in the bullpen. I don't know why, but he has been basically surpassed by Tyler Holton as like the go-to lefty for length in the bullpen. Yeah, but I don't, Yeah, I don't think he's in danger of getting cut just yet. They don't really have a ton of better options, but he hasn't been good this year. There's no doubt about that. But I was just looking, his FIP is almost exactly what it was last year. It's just been some more balls in play against them. So
a robust 5.13 FIP.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year was 4.99, I think. So it's not great either way, but yeah, I don't know. You got Englert and you got Holton filling that role of the bulk guy now. So yeah, he's found himself not pitching very much lately. So it wouldn't shock me actually if they did send him down to bring somebody else up for long.
What about Matt Winsler in AAA? Is he a guy that could be called up?
Yeah, he's pitched better as of late, but it's almost like, I don't know if he's how effective he would be up here. But then again, look, this is, we saw with Will Vest until his velocity started coming back towards the end of Toledo. To be fair here, but Matt Winsler has been somewhat inconsistent. There's times where he hits or doesn't limit the damage, but there's sometimes he gets hit up pretty hard. So I don't know.
Yeah, he's been pitching well down there, but yeah, and Miguel Diaz was pitching well until I think he gave up 6 runs tonight. You never know what's going on in the bullpen. Brendan White come up, but yeah, Whistler would be a guy they'd have to add to the 40 man. But maybe he opts out June 1st. It might be something. So maybe they will bring him up soon. It wouldn't shock me too much, but that would require, like I said, a 40 man move. I don't know what else they could do now. They put Brisky on the 60 day to sign Ellard.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting name. It's one of those things you pay a ton of attention to the draft around draft time. And I remember him as being a top 5 rounder. And then I completely forgot him for 5 years. But I guess he was with the Cardinals in the big leagues for a couple seasons. But I just didn't even. It's hard for me to pay attention to other teams' middle relievers.
Yeah.
But that's just, we've seen a lot of that under Scott Harris. They're going, these random people we didn't even know were on waivers. And they suddenly are on the planet. Like, hey, what? And yeah. So far, those ones have been okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just looking at some numbers, he has a 0.089 ERA and 20 and a third innings pitch. So if he is performing well, that was just one guy I looked at.
Yeah, and they have a couple other options too. They got those two guys from Tampa they signed. So they, again, it was just a matter of time before, beginning of June. We'll see how the series goes. The next 2 weeks are going to be very critical. Not critical, but I think they're going to be pivotal. That's the word I'm looking for. But as far as Dingler goes, you know what? I've been going back and forth about this question since I saw it earlier. And Dingler had a home run the other night and just continues to mash. He's hitting the ball hard. He's got 8 home runs. He leads the system in home runs. And the power he's been putting on is 11 strikeouts to 21 strikeouts to 11 walks. Now that's somewhat healthy. That's healthier than we're accustomed to seeing. You got a 13% walk rate and he's just striking out. I like to see the strikeouts just a little bit lower, not much, but beggars can't be choosers. I'm not trying to be nitpicky, but as far as if he's legit, yeah, he got invited to camp for a reason. He has Chris, you got that pick earlier, right? You posted that clip. Did he pick off somebody at second earlier?
Oh, yeah. He had a great throughout Robert Hassel. Nailed him. I struggle because one of the things is when you see Dylan Dingler good, you feel like he's an absolute all-star. And it's as we saw him in West Michigan in the beginning of his pro career, like this dude is a dude. Like he's really good. But we've seen it so many times now, man, where he's just incredibly streaky. So I was looking up. He came off his rehab down in low A, came up to Bowie and went nuts that first week. Since then, he's hitting 160. 160 with 12 strikeouts and 4 walks over 8 games.
Yeah.
I saw the game today. He struck out on 3 consecutive breaking balls in the dirt. Exact same pitch 3 times in a row, swung at all of them. And it's like we've seen that. We were in Erie once to watch him strike out 4 or 5 times in a game.
It was a golden, you got a golden Sabro, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was like for some reason, sometimes he doesn't see the ball or his bat doesn't find the ball. So I'd love to believe taking a step forward, it's hard for me to, until he can find some more consistency, it's hard for me to see.
Like defensively, he's there. Like defensively, yeah. He calls a good game. And look, you can tell this, since he got called up, Erie's been pitching better. There's no coincidence behind it. And it's simply put because Crouch was struggling behind the plate to call a game and in framing. With Dingler up, the starters have performed immensely better. Even the bullpen. And Billy Zassner went out there and pitched a scoreless inning the other night, which is a miracle because that team has been, it's bad. The bullpen has been bad. So I think he can commit. In terms of defensively, he's there. But it's a bat, like as Chris was mentioning earlier, there's some at-bats where I'm just like, what just happened? I don't know. But as far as defensively, he's the best catcher in the Tiger system defensively. Yeah, I'm convinced of that. It's the guy has a gun on him. And somebody asked last week if he could play a different position. Why would you? Honestly, I'd rather have him stay behind him. The more I thought about it, I'm like, no, I'd just rather stick him behind a plate.
Yeah, and that's the thing that people still view him as, oh, he's gonna be. I don't think he's gonna be appreciably better than Haas and Rogers as a big leaguer. He'll be a big leaguer because of that defense, but yeah, I just don't. The ability is certainly there. I just the consistency is a tough thing. But we've seen it. Catchers take forever. Eric Haas was striking out like 35% of the time in AAA when the Tigers bought him, and he's managed to lower that in the big leagues, which is just stunning to me. So there's still time for Dingler. I don't think he's reached that level just yet.
So the last question of the night comes from Tyler in chat, and I like this question a lot. Could the Tigers start focusing on developing relievers to be trade pieces? We've done a really good job of developing lately, Foley and Lang specifically. I like that. Here's the thing. If the Tigers decided, and I'll get your thoughts about this for here in a second. I personally think that if Brandon White becomes a guy, and let's say decide that they put Reese Olson in the bullpen, which I think to me ultimately serves as, I think Olson should be in the bullpen, and Youper would agree with that.
Yep.
And Chris, I think, would agree with that too. If they can find a way to make those guys, or even Austin Bergner, who has been just continuously pitching well, although I haven't checked in with him in a bit, then yeah, I think they could find a way. The trade for Malloy paid off immensely. Even with, you can say what you will about Nick Maton struggling at the plate, but he's good defensively. There's a couple lapses the last couple weeks, but nevertheless, the Tigers got some players they definitely needed.
Yeah, it's a fun idea because relievers almost always tend to get you an outsized return.
Yep.
Because you're just by the nature, you're trading a reliever to somebody who's trying to compete and win, and they're willing to part with a little bit more to get them to that next step, which is either another win or two to make the playoffs or being more of a competitor in the playoffs. Yeah. I it's tough to have these guys and finally have some success and to get rid of them, but I think you listen on everybody, right? If somebody gives you a good deal on Foley or Lang, yeah, you move on from them.
Yeah. For instance, a guy, and I'm forgetting who it is, but I follow him because he's a Rays writer. Speculating that they're going to need some bullpen help, right? He put it out there that, I'm sorry?
Sandy Kazmir.
Yeah.
He was saying, he put it out there saying, would the Rays move Curtis Meade for a bullpen arm this year to go for the World Series? If they were interested in Alex Lang, for someone like Curtis Meade, you plug in at second base next year and should be ready to hit. How do you not make that move? I'm not saying Alex Lang is worth that guy, but that's the kind of thing you got to be out there shopping for.
Yeah, I think if you believe in Chris Fetter and you believe in Scott Harris's ability to find pitching talent, then I think the Tigers could have a pretty good thing going. We've obviously Tyler Holden pitched well, Mason Englert pitched well, and Jason Foley and Alex Lang are still pretty young. Have a lot of years left to control, you can get something pretty good for them. And like I said, if this is just like a factory line where Harris is trading these guys for young players that can help us, and then he just keeps developing young pitching, like we said with Malloy, I think this could be something, not his calling card in a way, but this could be a way for him to really replenish the farm system and get some young talent in here.
But then you also got to realize too, like what Harrison said in the chat, let's go get another starting pitch and dig in and go after it. At some point, if the Tigers are competing for a division title, let's say in a hypothetical world, they're 2.5 back at the All-Star or at the trade deadline behind Minnesota. They're somehow keeping up with the Twins, and that's a tough decision you got to make. So it's like you go, all right, but then you go over, you look over across the American League, Houston's back to regular form, Seattle's doing their thing, and it's, all right, if we get to the playoffs, great, our fans are happy, but at the same time, it's almost, can they win the World Series? Yeah, like that's, those are the kind of questions that are coming up after.
Yeah.
You want to make, the, you want to be competitive. And I think that they're going to wait till the last possible minute until they make these kind of decisions. But to know that they have the development in place for it, that is something that the Tigers never had a luxury for. And this, they have a luxury that most teams don't.
It's going to be interesting if they play well enough to stay within the race for the Central. Again, go past Harris. Go to ownership. What does Ilitch want to do? Does he feel it's important for his reputation, for lack of a better word, to put a team out there that's trying to win this weak division, and that's going to mollify everybody who's monitoring what he does? Okay. Or are you trying to build a World Series winner? And that's the ultimate goal. And, you know, winning a rinky-dink division isn't really a step in that direction. And I'm not saying either one is right or wrong, but it's going to be interesting to see, what does Chris Ilitch really want to do? Where does he want to play in his franchise, if indeed he even cares?
Yeah, you completely just read my mind, because I was thinking, like, if they win the division, then they get three playoff games at Comerica Park, which I don't know how much of a factor that would be for Chris Ilitch, but you got to think that'd be a pretty big deal for him, having those caliber of games all in your ballpark.
But not to mention, too, you own the entire district of Detroit, and that, it just goes beyond Comerica Park.
Sure.
The thing that I, in my head, I'm like, okay, if you're going for it and you're giving it a shot, then who are you trading? Who are you going to trade? You're not going to trade your relievers, probably. Are you trading, right, is it Akil Baddoo? Kerry Carpenter? One of your younger outfielders to try to maybe get a pitcher? I don't know. I don't know who they will trade.
It have to be someone like Parker Meadows, right?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. Or Colt Keith or Justin Henry Malloy or Isaac Pacheco. I don't know if the Tigers are in the position to be wanting to part with any of their decent prospects. I think they could make small moves, probably, but I don't know. It's tough. It would be fun to have that be something to think about, but we're still.
I would say that the big thing away. I would say, the big move would be not dealing Erod. That would be, yeah, we're going for it.
Yeah,
we didn't move this guy.
Yeah,
I like what Tyler said too, which is, I personally think it would be a poor decision to be too aggressive with buying at the deadline, even if the Tigers contend in the division. Are they even close to contending in the league? And that's how I feel about it. I just don't. Right now, look at Baltimore. Baltimore is an embarrassment of riches. You talked about, Chris talked about Jackson Holliday. That's a system that's just keeps getting better. Yankees are not going anywhere. Jays are very good. And Tampa's doing what they're doing. And then you go to the West, it's a gauntlet out there with the exception of Oakland, which is a AAA franchise, really.
Yeah, there's also something to be said for just getting into the tournament, right? Sure. Give it a shot. Who knows what could happen? The Tigers would not be nearly as talented as the other playoff teams, but you have Erod go out there, maybe shuts down the team in game one. Who knows what could happen?
But yes, we'll draft. They've proven they can beat the Yankees. The Twins can't beat the Yankees. It's science, apparently. The Twins cannot beat the Yankees. It's a proven fact.
Yeah. I don't know, but so. Chris, you said like small moves. I was thinking like, I feel like this team is missing those bigger moves. Like, I feel like they're missing that frontline starter. So I think even if they were to make small moves, I feel like they already did that this offseason with like Vierling and Maton and McKinstry. So I feel like it would have to be like a middle of the order impact batter, like a frontline starter that would really make a difference for this team.
Did you say McKinstry was a big move?
No, it was like small.
Here's what I think. Like the Braves, that one year when they went out and got Soler and Duval. Yeah. And those weren't really, on the surface, big moves that were very expensive, because all those guys were on the outs everywhere they were. But man, they all came in and kicked some ass. They got lucky, or maybe not lucky, but it all worked. Maybe you just get on a run with Scott Harris where he brought in the right three guys and that propelled them.
To me, it's more, I don't think they had pieces to make big move, really.
Yeah.
It'd be something like some team would look at Reese Olson's pitch data and go, okay, he's sitting 95. He's got 3,000 RPM breaking balls. He's got a plus change up. Maybe we can figure this out. And so you get, like you've said, an MLB outfielder for Reese Olson. you could make a move like that. But I don't think that, yeah. I don't think you want to part with Colt Keith or Dustin Malloy or Parker Meadows, really, or Spencer Torkelson or Riley Green to try to make your team better. And I just don't know if they have the pieces beyond those guys to get anybody super impactful.
I'd rather wait for the system to be a little deeper because the system's not that deep. It really isn't. And if you look, honestly,
again, love Lynn Henning, great guy, but the whole idea that you're supposed to develop all of these kids, all these prospects, and have them ready, and then we're going to bring in all these veterans that they're going to be available, and we're going to build this team. Man, if they had a couple of guys that they could have went out and got over the winter and had them in place, now you can make a realistic argument how they could win this weak division and maybe make some damage in the playoffs. But the whole pecking order of God develop all these kids first and then we'll spend some money.
The difference between you, between myself and Henning is simple. I know the system's not that deep. If the Tigers were able to get some, they should have gotten some more bats. I'm with you. Like, they should have done something in the offseason, knowing full well the system's not deep. I love Lynn Henning. He's a great writer.
I do too.
Fantastic person. But you're trying to sell me on Cody Clemens, knowing full well that what I saw down there wasn't going to be a guy that was a regular contributor. Sorry. So to me, if I'm too cynical about the system, so be it. But they have some, for the first time, the Tigers have some legitimate players. They're still a couple of years away. So you find a way to fill the void until then. It's not, and I think Scott Harris is doing that. At least he's trying to do that, because the one thing about Avila was that he had all these prospects. There wasn't a lot of lateral movement because they didn't have anybody. But then even the guys they signed, like Chase Anderson and these pitchers, they signed him and then never did anything with him. Or talked about Trace Thompson earlier. He never got an opportunity. But then, again, that's the thing that's demanding. At least they're signing guys going, okay, you know what? This guy, all right, has some sort of track record. Bring him up. Go.
The one thing I would add, though, to like the trade deadline and going for it, you look at the market, I don't really know if there's going to be that many impact players even on this market. Like, you look at the teams in the AL, pretty much everyone outside of the AL Central is trying to compete, and I don't really know if a team like the Royals or the White Sox is going to make a trade with the Tigers. And like, you look at like impact starting pitchers, the Tigers probably have the best starting pitcher that's going to be on the market in Eduardo Rodriguez. So I just don't know. I don't think it's going to be a buyer's market. I think it's going to be a seller's market, which plays into the fact that they probably are going to trade Eduardo Rodriguez because they should be able to get something pretty good for him.
You know what? Here's a guy you could get at the trade deadline. Brett Rooker from Oakland. He's a guy that was just he wasn't a dude. He was just a cast off. He's having a good year. Oakland is not going to pay him. Well, I don't know what the hell Oakland's doing. We know what Oakland's doing, which is a whole lot of nothing. But then you have Ramon Lazzarato out there. And I was going to say, and we're on the same page. His numbers are not good right now, but he has an OPS plus over 102. That will do. And that's a guy but he was also going to be in great demand too. He's a guy that the teams are going to seek after. Oakland is going to sell anything they can that is not bolted on. There's Amanis Diaz, who's also a veteran. He's a guy who can play multiple positions. His batting average is not good, but he's a guy that's there. You have the great Tony Kemp. I'm just saying that sarcastically, but there's a couple. They have some guys there. They're going to move because Oakland's going to save money. You're eligible for a raise? Screw you. You're gone. They're going to probably do, like the small moves. And Dan Fernandez, amen, bro, man. He said this year, I don't see the Tigers making high-profile deals. We'll probably see a Johnny Peralta type move, if anything. I would take another Johnny Peralta. By all means.
Remember who they traded for Johnny Peralta?
Giovanni Soto.
That's right. You
really?
That's correct. I'll give you 5 points. Other Giovanni Soto, not the catcher.
Oh,
left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, you get a definite. You know what? No, you get this. This is what you get.
Exquisite.
But I'm pretty sure with Peralta, that not only did they trade for him, but then they had to sign him. I think they signed him to a 2-year deal, and then they re-signed him to 300 or something like that. But it turns out that Dave Dombrowski was pretty good at making trades.
He was.
We can hope that Scott Harris is close to that good. Early returns, not so great. I don't think the Tigers are necessarily missing Gregory Soto, but they kind of really haven't done a whole lot lately to make the team look better. But there's still time.
The Rockies are going to do something stupid. They're probably going to keep everybody because they believe that they do.
They won't turn anybody. No, they won't. Yeah. They won't. Yeah, it's hard to figure. Like right now, it's tough to know who's going to really suck over the next 30 games or something like that. It could be the Pirates. It's John's wishes. The Pirates go straight downhill and suddenly they're trading, I don't know, Ryan Reynolds after they resign.
Yeah, there's one guy in the Rockies who I don't understand why they've never traded him, and that's Germán Marquez. That guy could have been traded for a bunch of prospects, but Colorado's, I have no idea what they're doing. What a joke. Anyway, so we're out of time. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight on YouTube. If not, thank you for listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, where you listen to your podcast. And please leave us a 5-star review if you'd like, or a 4-star review. And we appreciate that. Again, if you want to give us a 1-star review and say we're bashing Torkelson too much, you're also, it's your God-given
right. I'll wear it. Yeah. I'll wear that one.
I think you haven't listened enough. But again, we'll be back on Sunday evening after the Tigers play the Nationals, or either Sunday or Monday. Depends on how the minor league podcast will go. More likely early Monday, but we'll figure that out. Let's do. And John, anybody else have any parting words before we get out of here?
Thank you to Harrison for the $5.
Yes, thank you again, Harrison. Much appreciated. And John, you want to plug your podcast?
It hasn't started yet, so nothing to plug yet.
What's the name going to be?
It's called Pistons Territory. So the backstory, when I was in high school, I met some people on Twitter and we started our own blog. It was called Pistons Territory. And so I basically reviving that, and it's now my own. Pistons Territory.
It's part of their network of things that are growing. Would you consider it part of the Motor City Metrics?
Sure,
family of shows.
Absolutely.
For basketball, it's the Motor City Metrics.
Oh. Wow.
All right, I gotta go. I'll see you guys later.
Thank you, Christopher, for the kind words. And there is, so one thing I want to announce real quick too before I forget is I have an idea that I've been wanting to do for a while that we just have not had an opportunity to because life, but I used to do a pop culture podcast called Over Under Fair, and I miss doing it a lot. And my friends, who I did it with, life happens. But we're going to be coming out with a podcast. I'm working on a podcast idea right now with Chris. We're still fine-tuning it. And it's going to be on the Motor City Metrics channel. And I'm going to debut the logo here real quick. So it's a cool name, and I thought it would be cool to share. Let's see if I can just get the... Oh, crap. Never mind. No. I got it. Hold on. I'm stumbling and bumbling here. Trying to get it up. This is bad. If somebody was like listening to the show right now, they're like, what is going on with this guy? But no, I love baseball, obviously, as everybody knows, but I also love music. I love movies. There's a lot of things we all love. And so I thought it'd be a good idea to combine the two and create a show that is called Pop Fly Culture. Mining baseball and pop culture and fly. So there you go. Let me see. Here's the logo here. Yeah. Working on the concept. So the idea would be, for example, an idea I came up with. So we take a year, like 1993, when the Chicago White Sox made the ALCS and lost to the Jays. And it was the same year that Smashing Pumpkins Siamese Dream came out. Or something. It could be rap. It could be anything. A movie, and it's based off a year or place and time in baseball. And we're going to try it out, see how it works, and probably come out in the next couple of weeks. But we're looking for, there'll be some cool topics along the way. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you guys this weekend.